You're listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Have you ever ridden the New York subway? I've had that experience because I used to, when I was in college, ride it at least once a day, Mondays through Saturdays. Sundays, I probably didn't ride it because I was located at the Uptown campus of New York University. At that time, they had an Uptown campus, University Heights, and that's where they had the engineering school, the science students, and at least for the first semester, I was majoring in nuclear physics. After the first semester, I decided that was not for me, and most college students change their major several times, and I think I did the right thing, because I quickly decided that, although I was good in math, good in physics, I simply wasn't good enough, because suddenly, instead of being the top 10% of your class, you're in the middle of the class, because most of the people in college are in the top 10%. So some people are smart than others, and some people have a natural aptitude for both mathematics and physics. And if you're going to major in physics and become a physicist, you better be very, very good in mathematics, including calculus. And I was taking both a physics course with a lab as well as calculus and several other courses. But after one semester, I thought the smart thing to do was to become a business major. And I transferred down to the business school, New York University Business School in Washington Square. Now, why am I telling you this? Because that was many, many years ago. To make that commute, I had to ride the New York subway. At that time, it was called the D train, and it was an express train that ran from the Bronx all the way to the tip of Manhattan. And it was very much an express train. It didn't stop at every station. But it did stop at Yankee Stadium. And lo and behold, today I was turning on the radio and there was a story of Mrs. Clinton, and this was obviously a photo opportunity, actually was going to ride the New York subway. Now, for those that are not familiar with her background, she's not a native New Yorker. She was born in a suburb in Chicago. And then when she married Hillary Clinton, lived many years in Arkansas, then in the White House for 8 years. And she decided to run for Senate. She wasn't a native of New York. And the reason why I have a recollection of this, my freshman year was the year that Robert Kennedy decided to run for the Senate seat in New York. And he appeared on the campus, and I actually heard him from a distance, and he got elected. You see, Robert Kennedy probably had a better claim to being a New Yorker because he did live in New York for a time. But his roots are in Massachusetts. That's where his family's from. And you would think he would run for the Senate seat in Massachusetts. But no, he thought he had a better shot in New York. So New York citizens are, let us say, used to carpetbaggers, people from out of state running for office. And Senator Hillary Clinton ran and got elected twice. Now, the reason is quite simple, and it's one of the reasons I left New York City. New York City, not upstate. New York City is very much a Democratic stronghold. And most people, middle class, working people, supported the Democratic candidates. Occasionally, a Republican would get elected. For example, my senior year, I actually worked as more or less an intern, but a summer job in City Hall in the municipal building of the John V. Lindsay administration. He was very much a liberal, what we today would call a rhino, Republican in name only. He had the looks. He was tall. He had the looks. Everyone thought he would run for president. Never worked out. But briefly, New York had a Republican mayor. Usually they're Democrats. Occasionally a Republican will win. Now what you need to understand, that is Manhattan and the boroughs. Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn, Staten Island. So we have Hillary Clinton going back to New York. She still has a house there. That's, I believe, her legal residence. And she might be spending a lot of time in that legal residence if she's found guilty of mishandling classified documents, which I hope she is brought charged, indicted, and brought to trial, because I think she's going to be found guilty. I think it's very much, given the amount of evidence, an open and shut case. But we'll see. I don't think it's going to happen because I believe Barack Obama is going to pardon her. So we hear the news that Hillary rode the subway from Yankee Stadium to the next stop. It wasn't the D train. The D train, I think they've renumbered it. I was looking at a subway map. The news report were saying the number 4 train, which I believe is a local. And I said, I bet you it's going uptown. Yep, it's going uptown, one station. And then she got off. This was to make her maybe seem more human, down to earth, that she's actually riding a subway. This is a lady that hasn't driven a car in decades. Because obviously when she was First Lady of Arkansas, then First Lady of the United States and Senator, she has Secret Service protection, so she never drives. She's driven around. So I thought it was odd. Why is she doing this? To me, it's a waste of time. I don't think it fools anyone. I think it surprised some of the writers. And yes, she was surrounded by the Secret Service. A few people got to shake her hand and take a photo with her. And I think there was a little tension, because you never know when you ride on the subway. Now, when I rode the subway every day, it was usually during rush hour. And you really, ideally, didn't want to be on the subway at rush hour, because literally you were crushed. Even though I would get on, I think, at 182nd, 183rd Street, and ride it all the way down and have to change briefly to go to Washington Square. But it was packed. And it's the same thing usually when I was coming home. Actually, it was worse in the evening coming home. It was an express train, and as you got further north into the Bronx, people would obviously be getting off, but usually it was packed. If you had your choice, you wouldn't ride the subway. I had no choice. The only way I could get to my college classes, especially during the week, and sometimes I would go down on a Saturday, was riding the subway. Not a pleasurable experience. It could be very challenging, and sometimes you have people that are drunk. Sometimes you have people that are violent. I would not wish the trip on anyone, especially during rush hour. Now, I don't think she did this in rush hour, and she was going the opposite way. She was heading up. If she got on this in the morning, which apparently she did, the trains going north, further north into the Bronx, are not as crowded as the trains going the opposite direction. And I heard a news report. The reporter was, gosh, isn't it wonderful that they have the technology to do the video? I've shot a lot of video. And I'm going, huh? They had news media following this. This was very much a media event, had people with a camera taking the pictures. Looks like photographs. I didn't see a video, but there's a number of photographs. I don't think the reporter knew that starting with Yankee Stadium on up, it's an elevated train. It's not underground. It only goes underground when you enter Manhattan. So you would think they would hire reporters, especially if they're reporting from New York, that have ridden the subway and sort of know the subway. Now, why did she ride it, besides the photo op? Well, a few days before, or a week before, her opponent, yes, she has a component. I know he's a placeholder, but her opponent, Bernie Sanders, was questioned by the Daily News and pressed on riding the subway. Now, when I rode the subway, you had to use a token, and over the years, the size of the tokens changed size. Initially, they were very small, then they got a little bigger. But I have not been back for many years. I think the last time I went back was in the early 1980s. And I would have gone back at least one or two other times, except on one of my vacations, on a ski vacation, I was sitting with a table, in a dinner table, and talking to the people there. And one of them, I mentioned the fact that I went to New York University uptown campus. And I was a little surprised because a gentleman said, well, I'm from there, and let me tell you, you don't want to go back. Please do not go back to the Bronx. Now, the South Bronx have always had a very bad reputation for crime and poverty. I don't know what has happened to those neighborhoods, but when I was there, that was very much true. So I asked him, well, why are you so emphatic? Because the neighborhood that I lived in and the campus was relatively, let's say, middle, upper class. It was a nice neighborhood. He says, no, not anymore. It's dangerous, drugs, they're rampant. Now, this was in the 1980s. So I said, well, I wasn't planning any trip in the future, but now that you mention it, I won't take the D train back up there just to see what the campus is like. Now, the campus was subsequently sold. New York University no longer has that uptown campus, and that's a pity because they were, at the time, they were developing it. They had I was in a dorm for one semester, then I lived in a fraternity house. But it was a nice area. And yeah, there were crimes. As long as you watch what was going on, had situation awareness, if you will, I didn't feel threatened. So I'm glad that Mrs. Clinton had Secret Service protection. Most of us don't have Secret Service protection, bodyguards. Most of us don't drive around or have a chauffeured limousine. And if you work and live in Manhattan or commute from the boroughs in the Manhattan, most people use the subways. That's the primary way to get in. Or if you live on Long Island, you have to use the Long Island Railroad. And for many years, I used to, with my parents now, I was small, commute from Long Island into Brooklyn or Manhattan, depending on where we were going. Normally, we went through Manhattan and then switched and took some, subways into Brooklyn. Now, why this trip down memory lanes? Well, Bernie Sanders was pressed by some of the reporters at this meeting. And I'll add a picture of that. I forgot to add it. I have a number of photos. And before I get, the way you listen to this show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And under my photo, you'll have links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. But under that, you'll have some of my show preparation or show notes, including photographs, YouTube videos, cartoons, articles, depending on the news story that I'm giving you my opinion on. So Bernie Sanders was really pressed. Well, tell me, how do you ride the New York subway? Well, you go and you use a token. Well, they haven't used tokens since 2003. Now, I knew that they didn't use tokens, but I didn't remember when because, like I said, I haven't been back for, almost 30 years. Maybe I'll go back sometime. Anyway, it's clear that Bernie does not ride the New York subway. So most people don't. If you don't live in New York or work in Manhattan, you probably have never been on the New York subway. And when I was living there, New York was going downhill. This was the late 60s, and in the 70s, it got bad. And people were leaving Manhattan. And that's when Donald Trump, if you will, made his fortune in the 70s and 80s, because he gambled that Manhattan would come back. And he was right. In other words, he bought property low and sold it high. You need a vision, but you also need money to do it. And Donald Trump was a great negotiator, and that was the start of his fortune. Now, like any businessman, or in this case, a real estate developer, you're making big bets. You're making gambles, and if you're right and could get the project off the ground and actually build the building, and he was successful doing at it, you reap the rewards. In other words, Donald Trump is the type of individual that you need for the simple reason, where are the jobs created? Most of the jobs are created in the private sector with and by small businesses that start out small and grow. That's what happened with Donald Trump. And let's be clear here, his father was a small real estate developer that got very, very successful, first building houses and then apartments, primarily in the Queens, Brooklyn area. And some of those, many of those units were refinanced, and that gave Donald Trump the ability to buy property. Now, usually he tried to not put any money or very little money in it, get financing from either banks or insurance companies, get tax abatements from the city. But he had a deal with politicians, as all other real estate developers had to do in New York City, or for that matter, any town. And Donald Trump wanted to build in Manhattan. His father really did not want to do it. His father's Fred passed away, but he stayed away from Manhattan and discouraged his son to not do it. And they had long, drawn-out arguments. But eventually, after his father had confidence in Donald, after he successfully managed and developed real estate, Donald went on his own, and the rest, as you say, is history. Now, I'm saying this for a reason. It's small businessmen that grow into large businesses that create the jobs. And talk to anyone that has done that will tell you, you risk your money. You spent, it's really a 24/7 job. You're looking for new clients, or in Donald Trump's case, properties to build on. And sometimes that involves making campaign contributions to politicians to get access. And Donald Trump was ambitious and succeeded at it. Timing is important here. Real estate typically has a 7 or 8 year cycle. It goes up and then it goes down, up and down. But it varies from city to city, or county to county, or town to town. And you got to know the area. And in real estate, it's location, location, it's location. Now, I give you this history because that's what the problem is today. We need more business formation. We need the economic incentives that encourage entrepreneurs to take that risk, both in money and time. And to the extent they make the right decisions, in other words, they execute their plans, their company grows, they hire people, and jobs, income, and wealth are created. We need tens of thousands of new businesses to be formed. But what is crucial is to have the right environment, if you will, both tax, regulatory, to do it in. The problem today is, as I mentioned in the last show, the United States is a high-tax nation. Europe is, and many European countries are actually worse, but we have very high corporate taxes. And corporations are only tax collectors. They largely pass on the cost of taxes to their customers or clients in terms of prices. So they're really collecting government. I'm not into this, well, we have to sock it to the rich by having higher tax rates on corporations. No. Now, if you listen to yesterday's show, I came out for the fair tax, in particular my version of the fair tax. I'm going to be covering that next week. I'm not going to go over it again. But the reason I went over this is to point out what's holding back economic growth in the United States today is our current income tax system. And what might surprise you, for over 100 years, we did have limited government, we did have small government, and there was a strong aversion to taxes. You see, we get tyranny when we have high taxes. We get large governments when we have high taxes. And usually, not usually, I mean, I would say all the time, the primary reason for the high taxes is the nation is going to war and needs to spend a lot of money to feed the troops, arm the troops, and go to war. War is the primary cause of large governments and higher taxes, and you end up paying those costs for many years because a lot of wars usually are also financed, which means you incur debts and pay interest on those debts. I bring this up because there was a large resistance to taxes, and the first big war that required a lot of taxes was the United States' Civil War. The primary cause of the Civil War was not slavery. It was taxes. It was pay the taxes or war. And that's why the South left the Union. They didn't want to pay the taxes. And Lincoln, yes, that Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, we fought a war. Now, to be fair to everybody, everyone thought it was going to be a short war, a couple of months. Initially, the people that were recruited in the Army, it was for a four-month period. No one really saw until later that hundreds of thousands of both Union soldiers and Confederate soldiers will die. It was by far our bloodiest war, but it was a tax war. That was the cause. And prior to that, there had been tax rebellions. The first big one was the American Revolutionary War that was over taxes. You see, where you see increased taxes, that's where you find tyrannies. The Greeks understood this, the Romans understood this, and you inevitably go from a republic of limited government to an empire of massive government, and that's exactly what has happened to the United States today. Because like I said yesterday, what is the problem, the number one problem facing the United States? Our Congress, under Democrats and Republicans, both in the House and the Senate, have spent money that the American people can't afford. Spending is out of control. You don't hear much about that from either the Democrats or the Republicans. Now, the Democrats would like to spend more money and increase your taxes more. I'm for limited government, which means closing down large parts of the federal government and reforming, which means cutting welfare programs and entitlements. Because, yes, the national debt is heading towards $20 trillion. That's $20,000 billion, $20 trillion. But our unfunded liabilities are over $100 trillion, heading for $200 trillion. We'll never be able to pay that back. And the reason why is out of control entitlement programs. Social Security and Medicare are the big drivers of that. And now we have a president, Barack Obama. Now, I debated whether or not even to mention this, because the Supreme Court is not going to hear this case until April 18th. If there's a decision this year, it'll be June or July. The President of the United States is not acting. He is a tyrant. Remember, every public official, from the president to a senator, representative, military officers, have to swear an oath or affirm that they will preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States as well as our laws. We have a president that is claiming that he unilaterally, by executive order, can tell millions of individuals, namely illegal aliens, that he will not enforce the law against them. Mr. President, if you are betraying your oath of office because you swore an oath to implement and enforce federal law. Instead, you're violating that oath and not enforcing immigration law. But it goes further. He won't take any action against him in the future. And here's the kicker. Here's what's really new. These illegal aliens that, if the law were enforced, would be deported, are now, he's arguing, will be eligible for Social Security and disability benefits. We have an out-of-control president that is not being reined in by the Congress. He should have been impeached. And as the only two remedies are impeachment or cutting off the funds. In this case, it's the funds for the Department of Homeland Security that have responsibility for enforcement of immigration law. So that's what the Solicitor General, Donald Verrilli, was telling the Supreme Court yesterday. The decision will be heard on the 18th. And this is in the case United States versus Texas. You see, the majority of states, I think they're either 26 or 27, are suing the United States. And they should, because we have a president that's out of control and we have spending that's out of control. And this will increase spending. Now, I debated whether or not to report this, because a lot of people are waiting for this decision. Whoever gets elected president, I'm hoping now it's Donald Trump. I don't think Ted Cruz is going to get the number of delegates. Now, I know there are a lot of Cruz supporters. He's my first choice, but like I said yesterday, if you look at the numbers, he's not going to get 1,237 delegates on the first ballot. Whether or not Donald Trump can get to that number remains to be seen. Now, I want to play a clip. And normally, I don't play any clips on Bernie Sanders, but this one actually, surprisingly, well, I won't give it away. Let me play what Bernie said. And you seldom hear Democrats saying this, but let me play it.
But I'm asking about
something else, because Secretary Clinton, I think, made some interesting and good points. What you have now is a very dangerous moment in American history. Secretary is right. Our people are fearful. They are anxious on a number of levels. They are anxious about international terrorism and the possibility of another attack in America. We all understand that. But you know what else they're anxious about? They're anxious about the fact that they are working incredibly long hours. They're worried about their kids, and they're seeing all the new income and wealth, virtually all of it, going to the top 1%. And they're looking around them, and they're looking at Washington, and they're saying, the rich are getting much richer, I'm getting poorer. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do for my kids? And
that's just an introduction. That's the stump speech, or part of the stump speech for Bernie Sanders. But here's the clip I really wanted to play. Excuse me for making that mistake. It's not very long.
Now, the other day, I think Secretary Clinton appears to be getting a little bit nervous. We have won 7 out of 8 of the recent primaries and caucuses. And she has been saying lately that she thinks that I am, quote unquote, not qualified to be president. Well, let me just say in response to Secretary Clinton, I don't believe that she is qualified. If she is through her super PAC taking tens of millions of dollars in special interest funds. I don't think that you are qualified if you get $15 million from Wall Street through your super PAC. I don't think you are qualified if you have voted for the disastrous war in Iraq. I don't think you are qualified if you have supported virtually every disastrous trade agreement which has cost us millions of decent paying jobs. I don't think you are qualified if you supported the Panama Free Trade Agreement. Something I very strongly oppose, and which, as all of you know, has allowed corporations and wealthy people all over the world to avoid paying their taxes to their countries. This campaign is gaining momentum because we are listening to the American people, not wealthy campaign contributors.
That was Bernie Sanders at a rally at a college. Now, I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to get the nomination, although many young people and millennials support him because they don't understand what socialism is. And ultimately, it leads to tyranny and death by government in terms of genocide or democide. That's simply the ignorance of the young. Socialism has failed in virtually every country, not every country, but virtually every country it's been tried, including Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union and Communist China. It doesn't work. It doesn't deliver the goods. It doesn't give you peace and prosperity. So Bernie Sanders is not going to get the nomination, but he is unexpectedly giving Hillary Clinton a run for her money. And like I was saying yesterday, imagine Hillary Clinton, the two-time senator from New York, imagine if she lost in New York. In other words, ran second behind Bernie Sanders. Is it possible? Anything's possible. But if that should happen, Hillary Clinton would be in trouble. I would say serious trouble. She'll still get the nomination because she has most of the superdelegates. However, those superdelegates can always change their mind and would change their mind if the momentum of Bernie Sanders continues. Should Bernie Sanders beat her in New York, many Democrats, especially their donors, that are very rich. See, there's a myth that the rich support the Republican Party. And to an extent they do. But the big supporters of Hillary Clinton are the super rich. starting with George Soros, far wealthier than even Donald Trump, as well as the investment bankers and executives of commercial banks, many of them based in New York City. They're all supporting her together with hedge fund managers. The very wealthy support Hillary Clinton. They will not be supporting Bernie Sanders if some way, somehow, Bernie squeaks in. I don't think it's going to happen, but if it did, and the Democratic Party would do anything to stop it. This very much is a rigged election for Hillary Clinton, rigged by the Democratic National Committee and the Clinton Crime Network. In other words, the fix is in. And if should the FBI go forward with a criminal or referral requesting the Department of Justice. See, the step is this. The FBI makes the referral. They're responsible for investigating, and then they send over to the Department of Justice what charges or what crimes they think Hillary Clinton has committed, a summary of the evidence, and then it's up to the prosecutors in the Department of Justice that are assigned to the case to evaluate it and then make a recommendation whether or not to go forward to the grand jury, because it's only the grand jury that can indict and charge her. That should be happening right now. Actually, it should have been happening earlier. And many people are still under the delusion that it's going to happen. I think the criminal referral will happen. When? I don't know. But at some point in time, what is going to happen? Barack Obama is going to give an absolute pardon for what Hillary Clinton did. And at that point, it goes away. And Hillary Clinton knows it. That's why she's not worried about either Bernie Sanders or a criminal indictment. It's a rigged game. The Democratic Party is not democratic. It's socialist, but it's certainly not democratic. I wish Bernie Sanders well, but he's not going to get the nomination. He's not going to get support of the big donor class. The money he's raising, and he's raising a lot of money, is from small contributions. You see, the Democratic Party is very much divided. The progressives are backing Bernie Sanders, including their opinion magazines such as the Republic, the New Republic, the Nation, and others. So the progressives are all behind Bernie. The liberals, now Hillary Clinton self-identifies as a progressive. Some progressives are still supporting Hillary. The money is certainly supporting Hillary Clinton, the donor class. You see, there's a revolt in the Democratic Party base against the Democratic Party leadership. That's what's going on. They don't want or like or trust or believe Hillary Clinton, no matter how many photo ops she has. Now, I want to play, again, if hopefully play the right clip, Hillary Clinton's response to Bernie Sanders' comment. And she gave it to reporters that were accompanying her on this photo opportunity at Yankee Stadium to ride the subway. Listen to this.
Look, I don't know why he's saying that, but I will take Bernie Sanders over Donald Trump or Ted Cruz anytime. So let's keep our eye on what's really at stake in this election. We have Republicans whose values are so antithetical to what's right for New York or right for America. And I'm just going to keep doing what I've been doing with my friends like the borough president and others for all these years to try to...
That was Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders is right. She's not qualified to be president. What did you just say? She said Bernie Sanders is qualified. Is she out of her mind? She knows he isn't, as opposed to Donald Trump or Ted Cruz. I rest my case. Now, I wouldn't use the word qualified. I don't think anybody is qualified to be president of the United States. Some are more qualified than others. And she has had some executive experience in terms of being Secretary of State. But you need to judge that experience and that qualification against performance. The United States foreign policy under Hillary Clinton has been a disaster. In Libya, Syria, the Middle East, the word I would use is incompetent. You see, it doesn't matter if you're hardworking or travel tens of thousands of miles. Results matter. You see, good intentions and being well-meaning are not enough. Results or performance matter. And in that regard, Hillary Clinton has been a disaster, not only as Secretary of State, but when she was First Lady in her handling of health care. So anyone that says, Hillary Clinton says, that Bernie Sanders is qualified, better qualified than either Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, is out of their mind. What's the executive experience of a socialist like Bernie Sanders? Very little. It no way compares to the success of Donald Trump in employing tens of thousands of people on his various real estate projects that were successful. Donald Trump has had some failure and has had some comeback. And yes, some of his corporations have faced bankruptcy. And yes, investors have lost money. But talk to any businessman, especially a successful one, they will tell you they've had their ups and downs. Very few are as successful as Donald Trump. He has executive experience, whether you will admit it or not. He's one of the remaining five. He definitely has executive experience. I think Governor Kasich does, but he's certainly not my cup of tea as governor of Ohio. But Bernie Sanders doesn't, and unfortunately, neither does Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is an attorney. He's an advocate, a brilliant one, a terrific one, and frankly, closer to my political ideology, but he was not first, second, or third on my list. But of the five remaining candidates, both Trump and Cruz, I would still vote for. I would never vote for Bernie Sanders nor Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, as far as I'm concerned, should get her day in court, and if the jury finds her guilty, which I think they will if it ever gets there, she should go to prison for committing crimes, as well as the staff that enabled her. There were several other individuals that enabled these gross violations of federal law regarding the handling of the most sensitive documents of this country. She's incompetent. She's not qualified to be president, and I hope that the FBI will finally submit its criminal referral to the Department of Justice. Take all the time you need, but it really should happen before the convention of the Democratic Party. And we're still gonna be weeks, if not months, away before the Department of Justice, who drag its feet, makes a determination. I think there's going to be so much evidence that it's inescapable that they're going to have to go to the grand jury. And that is when President Obama and Attorney General Lynch will politically interfere in this case. And Obama will grant her pardon. Now, they're all hoping on the Democratic side that this happens after the election. Ideally, they want the criminal referral after the election. And even if that happens before, they don't want this to go forward. So they're going to slow walk it. They're going to drag their feet. Now, if you're successful, as Donald Trump has been, Donald Trump doesn't ride the subway. He might have done it a few times when he was young. He rides in a limousine. That is one of the rewards of being successful. And when you're successful, you need other people. You see, it's the people that work for you that make you successful, that you hire. They do a good job and you promote them. And the ones that don't do a good job, whether they're employees or contractors, you learn and reluctantly have to let go or fire. That's what business owners, business executives have to do every day. But to the extent that they are successful, it benefits society. It benefits the United States. I wish we had 10,000 Donald Trumps, Bill Gates, in terms of their successes, because they employ thousands, tens of thousands of people. That's how you make America great again, by having a business environment of lower taxes and significantly less regulation, and ideally where you don't need to have access to politicians. In other words, the way it was in the United States for over 100 years, with the exception of wartime such as the Civil War. We're not going to make America great. We're not going to have a peaceful and prosperous United States until government spending is brought under control and we have balanced budgets and we slowly and surely reduce the national debt. I think the only candidate that has executive experience and has created jobs is Donald Trump. He's not a conservative, although many of his positions conservative support. For many years, he supported Democratic politicians. However, he did support Ronald Reagan. Donald Trump wants to be a winner, but he wants to make many other businesses winners too. And if he's elected, I think he knows the problems, the challenges businesses face. And we're not going to make America great if we don't have growth rates of 4%, 5%, 6%. And that means reducing the size of government radically, as well as reducing taxes and reducing regulation. In other words, we need a pro-growth economic agenda. Donald Trump needs to have a game changer in terms of his campaign. He's had a bad week or two. He'll bounce back. That always happens, whether it's in politics or business. Not every day or every week you're going to come up smelling like roses. And he will most likely win the majority of delegates in New York. If he does, that will give him a big boost towards winning the Republican nomination. You see, Ted Cruz is a little over 250 delegates behind Donald Trump. If Donald Trump wins New York big, like 50% or more, he gets all 95 of the delegates. It is by congressional district. But if he gets 50% in most, if not all, of the congressional district, he'll get all 95, which means Donald Trump will be over 340 delegates ahead of Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz simply is not going to get 1,237 delegates on the first ballot. The only way Ted Cruz gets the nomination is if the establishment tries to steal it from Donald Trump. And they'll try it. They're spending tens of millions of dollars attacking Donald Trump. Now, let me make very clear, the establishment Republicans that are largely progressives, the way to think of Washington, D.C., it's a progressive cartel. They're progressives in the Democratic Party, and they're progressives in the Republican Party, and both parties want bigger and bigger government, and bigger government requires more and more taxes, and what do you get? You get tyranny, and we already have it in spades in Barack Obama. Gross violations, the betrayal of his oath of office and United States law, and not enforcing it. And not just in the immigration area. He's out of control. He is out of control. Spending is out of control. Taxes are out of control. Regulation is out of control. And then you wonder why we're on the verge of another recession that could turn into a depression. We'll find out at the end of the month. So Donald Trump, in my mind, is the front runner, not only in the Republican Party, but eventually in the race between the Democrats and the Republicans. His big challenge right now is to get to that magic number of 1,237 delegates. He'll come close, but he has to win big in New York, and he has to win big in California. And California is really the bigger challenge for the simple reason there are a lot of conservative Republicans in California. I don't think he's going to have a sweep of California, but it's going to be in California that we really know whether Donald Trump has the 1,237 delegates. Now, if he doesn't, like I said yesterday, he needs to cut a deal with Ted Cruz. Make Ted Cruz his vice president. Remember, John F. Kennedy ran against Lyndon Baines Johnson. Kennedy won the nomination, but offered, and Lyndon Baines Johnson accepted, the vice president position. Remember, at the time, Lyndon Baines Johnson was Senate Majority Leader. Kennedy, frankly, didn't think Johnson was going to accept it, and was surprised when he did. And his brother, Robert Kennedy, yes, that Robert Kennedy, tried to take it back, and he was told to take a walk, because Lyndon Baines Johnson had already accepted. I say that because if you want to be the president, sometimes you have to compromise. That's what Kennedy did with Lyndon Baines Johnson, and that's also what Ronald Reagan did with George Herbert Walker Bush. Remember, Bush and Reagan were in competition for the nomination. Reagan won, but he knew he had to have a united party, just as Kennedy and the Democratic Party knew he needed the South and Texas to win the general election. And the rest, as they say, is history. Now, I've given you this insight because by early June, hopefully before, Donald Trump needs to cut the deal, needs to make the deal with Ted Cruz. I hope he does it earlier rather than later. Timing is everything. Doesn't have to do it this week. I would say sometime in May, middle of May, he really should do this. Once Donald Trump is over 1,000, I think he'll get, like I said, 1,150 plus or minus 75. Once Donald Trump is clearly over 1,000 or 1,100, that's the best time for him to approach Ted Cruz and make the deal. You support me for the presidential nomination on the first ballot. I support you and nominate you for my vice president. And I think, despite some of the supporters of Cruz that say he'll never accept it, I heard that from Glenn Beck, for example, on his show. I think Ted Cruz, if he's smart, and apparently he is, will accept it. In a New York Minute, will accept it. Just like Lyndon Baines Johnson accepted it when Kennedy offered it, and just as George Bush accepted when Ronald Reagan offered. So if you're successful, especially in New York, you don't ride the subway. You ride that limousine. And let me play a song of Elvis Presley, The Long Black Limousine. Here it is.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the big, freaky International Hotel.
There's a long line of mornings driving down our little street. Their fancy cars are such a sight. They're all your rich friends who knew you in the city, and now they finally brought you home to me. When you left, you know you told me that someday you'd be returning.
I play that in memory of Merle Haggard that died on his birthday yesterday, and I thought it was appropriate. Now, I'm debating whether to play one other song, but I won't. I don't really have the time. Friday's show will not be a long show. I'm looking at the time. This show is just about right. We'll see what's in the news, because like I said, I woke up this morning, and the news was about Hillary Clinton riding the submarine. Not a submarine, a subway. She probably hasn't ridden a subway in years. Probably the last time when she was running for senator. It was a photo op, folks. Most of the time, she's riding in a long black limousine, just as Donald Trump is. So don't be fooled by the pictures. What counts is not intentions or good intentions or being well-meaning. What counts with people, everybody, is results, is working hard and delivering results. Being well-intentioned and putting an effort is not enough. It is truly accomplishing the goals. Unfortunately, we have leaders for many years, both in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, that have provided results that are hurting the American worker, American citizens. Today, we're more concerned about people breaking into our country, namely illegal aliens, than we are about American citizens and the workers. We have an oligarchy, a progressive cartel consisting of big government, big media, big labor, and big business. They care about power and money. They don't care, really, about you and me and the general welfare of the American citizens. That's why we're seeing, both in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, a rebellion, a revolt against the political elitist establishment in this country. They're going to try to stop Bernie Sanders and the Democratic Party for sure, as well as Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. They should be afraid, because the American people are not going to put up with their lies, their deceits, and their incompetence and failure to grow this country and take our freedoms away. We want our freedom. We want lower taxes. We want lower spending. And if that means firing, voting out of office, representatives, senators, so be it. You've been given more than one chance to mend your ways, and you're shown that you're incapable of doing it. So it's time for a change of leadership, whether that's Donald Trump or Ted Cruz. I leave that to the people. Right now, I think it's going to be Donald Trump getting the nomination and Donald Trump being elected president. We don't want a third term for an incompetent president. That third term would be Hillary Clinton. Now, on a more positive note, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.